Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All righty, Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And we are going to be talking with the guest here shortly, impeaching the president, past, present, and future, with Alan Hirsch. Alan was with us. Has he been on once or twice?
I want to say twice.
I thought so.
I think twice.
Yeah. And because there was a lot to cover in this book.
Oh, yeah.
And
because I don't think you still wasn't able to get through the
whole. I
wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot. There's a lot here.
Because each time you spoke with him, there was an impeachable offense going on. So we kept saying, well, if he gets, if, so now.
Then yeah. I'm going to keep the number. We're going to call you back. Because he has a chapter 7 in his book.
Okay.
Is the case of Trump.
Ooh.
So we're going to be chatting on that. And this was written, I think he said he wrote this towards the end of last year. And as things were unfolding, if I'm remembering this correctly, that he had to add that chapter.
Yeah.
Because it was starting to just thicken up and, you know, the gravy was getting thick and I had to have a stir on it. Yeah, he wrote in 18. So it was time. It was coming to be time. And this thing is going to unfold like crazy.
Yeah.
What do you think? Because I was just noticing in the news that people were, you know, calling their congresspersons and telling them this and that. What if you called George, what would you say?
I would say you better vote to impeach. And I think ours is. Who's that, Congressman Cooper? Is he our representative? Yeah. And we know how he, yeah. Because of the, it's obvious. If President Obama had did half the things that this guy has done, that we would have been pleased. They tried to.
Well, my question would be, what else does a person have to do?
Yeah. Does he literally have to shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue?
Well, I don't even think that Bob Barr would find him guilty.
Oh, no. President was well within
he
his rights.
He would say, whoops.
Yeah. The mean, president was well within his rights to shoot an innocent person.
Right.
That's just, you know.
Yeah. So I there is nothing that I don't think, you know, the people that.
On the very day that he's facing an impeachment hearing, here comes a Russian oligarch in the Oval Office.
That one was a lot.
Standing on the right side of Trump.
That was a lot.
In the Oval Office, whereas the person who's been trying, Ukraine president, who's been trying to get a meeting in the Oval Office, still hadn't gotten one.
Well, the whole thing of, you know, that was the meeting, the original meeting, was the one where there were no Americans allowed in, no reporters, nobody to document any of it, and then slammed the door in everybody's face.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow. On page 191 of Alan Hirsch's book, this is where he, and of course, he's definitely got, we got to talk about revision.
Yeah.
Okay. He's got on page 191, obstruction of justice section.
Yeah.
And he says, so he writes, whether or not the Trump campaign conspired with Russia's covert operations to tip the 2016 presidential election, evidence suggests that members of the campaign and later the White House staff impeded investigations into such allegations. Donald Trump Jr. apparently made false statements about his meeting with a Russian lawyer, and the president apparently helped draft a misleading statement about the meeting. And according to President Trump himself, he fired FBI Director James Comey in part because of Comey's persistence in investigating such allegations. That was 18. So, you know, 19, he's got an encyclopedia.
Yeah.
That was the final chapter. There's more here, but that was from, and he also has on page 196, abuse of the pardon power.
Yeah.
And then he goes into another portion here. A lot of the stuff is just almost the headlines we have
it
today.
Is. I mean, it is. Rip from the headlines.
He's got receipt of emoluments, and he's got that case and that information on that in here, as well as payoffs to Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal. It's going to be a good conversation with Alan. So tell
you think
us.
40 minutes is enough time?
I don't know, man. Like,
that's stuff we forgot about. I mean, there's people sitting in jail right now for stuff that that we had even gotten to Trump about that he is allegedly the center of attention of or orchestrated. Wow.
Yeah, it's deep, ain't it? You know, and he's he also has.
How does he pay for all these lawyers? I don't get. That's what I want to know.
We're paying for them.
We are.
Sure.
Oh.
Yeah. He don't pay for nothing.
Oh.
Taxpayer.
I thought the office of the White House
Bill
counsel
Barr
was the,
is
oh, I forgot about him.
He's the state he's government.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So for I guess to the people who didn't know what Eric Holder actually did as Attorney General, I guess if they look at Bill Barr and see the opposite of of how you should act. But see how much he's going out of his length to cover for the president. And maybe they have an understanding of the significance of how important that position is now.
Well, but when he did it, it was a flaw in everything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Benghazi.
Yeah, there's no flaws. And you know, that no one is willing to admit to publicly.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the Tennessean has got a story in today's paper that Mayor Cooper is falsely claimed Nashville is in receivership at an event at Lipscomb, and that has been, of course, the talk of.
He did what?
The story says that the mayor claims Nashville is in receivership at an event at David Lipscomb. And So there'll be a lot of chatter in Nashville on a lot of the things that he says and does. Because one of the things that he did promise when he was running was to crunch all numbers and to check over everything.
Oh, wow.
And
I don't think he was playing either.
I distinctly remember, does that mean you're going to get the big calculator out? He said, yes, I am. We'll have to see how this goes. Because I am thinking now that some people are not going
be
to
happy.
Be. No. Especially when, several of the proposed things that are in or have been discussed, or even in the news, you know, have not made a lot of folks happy.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's hard for people to be happy when the city like Nashville, it just doesn't make any sense to anybody why the city doesn't have any money.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It just is like, it just
downtown.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, okay, what is wrong?
All the buildings going
with
up
this
all
picture,
over the place.
Right?
Yeah, but just, we broke? What?
You know, what? I mean, it just, oh, Lord, oh, Lord.
Cranes everywhere.
And the affordable housing, the Barnes Fund, you know, so many people looking for affordable housing in Nashville were so much looking forward to that. Money coming in to that, and that's been reduced or cut in half. So it's, you know, it's going to be a tightening. But I just, you know, like most of the citizens, you just wonder where and what.
Mm-hmm.
And
what about us?
And why, you know, has our city lived beyond its means?
Yeah.
Did we give too many tax breaks?
Mm-hmm. Was that was Nzinga? Who did one of Nzinga? You had her in here, and she talked about a report that she had written about being in college, and then after she's graduating, can't afford to even stay here and work.
Can't stay nowhere near downtown.
Yeah. So students are graduating. We have all these universities here and all these bright minds, and then they're leaving.
Well, because and the citizens who live in this area,
yeah, the citizens who live here are leaving.
Right, they're gone too because they can't afford it.
So who's going to live in Nashville? Just the affluent?
Well, that's kind of what it's looking like, you know. So whatever you have, in terms of if it's yours, you're owning it, you better hang on to that. Huh? And because a lot of people have said, had the conversation, the discussion about receiving all those letters in the mail and those postcards, people trying to offer to buy your house and, you know, every neighborhood all over the city. And they're constantly getting besieged by receiving those letters and the postcards and we'll give you cash and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I would say if you do that, you just clearly are going to be paying a whole lot more wherever you move to. Because that was one of the things that somebody I know that's in there. 20s from mid to late 20s was having that discussion that they want to live in Davidson County but just simply cannot afford it and want to because this is where they grew up, but it's three female, male, and a child. And by the time the daycare and this and that and da-da-da, you just can't afford it. I mean, literally can't afford it.
Yeah.
If you make a single person, if you make less than 50 grand in Nashville, you're struggling. And, single person, one income, no boo and no nothing else, you're struggling. So it is really... I don't think it's going to die down anytime soon. Honest to God, I don't. I don't see the trend going in the other direction.
True.
So knowing that that's the case, this area has continues to be as popular as it's always been. It's attracting a lot of people. But once they get here, they're saying, man, they got to have a lot of money to live in this place.
Yeah.
And the other counties, you know, where it's... their cost of to live in their communities is not as high, but it's creeping up, you know, with the Clarksville growth that they have been experiencing.
That's true.
It won't be long before that Clark cost of living there is going to bump up. And then, you know, because they're just between Nashville and Kentucky.
That's
the perfect thing right
there. They're getting the residuals of our dollars.
Oh, no question.
Because the persons who will buy a home here still buy it there or rent there.
Yeah.
And so all the taxes and all the stuff goes to support all the surrounding counties.
Definitely.
And we're sitting here and we can't afford, we don't have the revenue to, but everyone else is booming around us.
Yeah.
While the inner city in Nashville is booming.
Well, you know, and if that's the case, as they boom, they need to help pay for some transit.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's get the last train from Clarksville.
Yeah.
Or the Bellevue.
Express.
Yeah. Or the Dixon train at 6:15 to that. I mean, you know, we could use this stuff.
Yeah.
Honest to God. And the...
I think it's going to
happen. The Royal Rutherford County rail lines. I mean, let's get...
I believe that Mayor Cooper is going to implement this.
Do you?
I do.
Where's the money coming from?
He's got that big calculator out. You just said
so
it.
So he going to crunch and squeeze.
There's a reason.
And crunch and
he's
squeeze.
He's not just crunching. Yeah, he's not just crunching just to sort of see where the money went. There's going to be some unhappy people.
Oh.
Because some budgets are getting ready to get moved around. You know, there's some things getting ready to change.
Well, and most likely it's going to impact... the people that aren't in the position to be able to absorb it.
Yeah.
Okay. And unfortunately, because that's what the affordable housing money was for.
Yeah.
Is for those people. And that's where the hurt is going to be. It's never where we think it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
In the coming months and days, we'll have to see, because that formula, he's going to definitely have to lay that formula out to the citizens regularly.
So you've known him for a little while, huh?
I have. I've known his brother longer than him.
Okay. So is he a transparent person? In other words, is he a person that sort of is going to, like, whatever he finds, lay it out for the people to see why he's making decisions or
what kind of... Well, he's going to have to in this position.
Okay.
Because that's what he ran on. He has to. And even though he hasn't made his round back over here yet.
Well, you said you were going to give him a little while to, you know.
But, I mean, time is up. Okay. The jig is up, baby. Okay. Okay. So, having said that, you know, because October, the jig was up then, and I'm still sitting there. But I don't know. But, you know, I just don't want to feel that don't come to this door and to us. And that's all the people in office. Yeah. Because you want to, you know, make your slap backs and be good to the black folk, and then y'all vote for me, and then I don't hear from you.
Or you need to get your word out because something is going awry. Now you got to get the word out.
Yeah, we ain't answering that door. Okay, we ain't answering that door because that's wrong. And, you know, I just think that, you know, folks need to know we woke. we are awake. We have awoken. And we get it, you know, just like some people in the church say, don't just show up on election time. You know, where y'all been? Same thing for black radio. Where y'all been? Anyway, we are on the Wednesday, second weekend, the month of December, the merry month of December. Two weeks from today is Christmas. Shut up, Nashville. Oh, Lord. Whew. I haven't bought a thing. Oh, my God. I just looked at the calendar. I'm like, holy smokeronis. 2 weeks from today. Wow. Anyway, on Christmas Day, we'll have our 24 hours of Christmas, continuous Christmas programming. So we hope you'll tune in and be all up in the spirit of the season. Let's take a time out. And we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
I need help with my taxes. Where can I find free tax help?
If you make $54,000 a year or less, you can participate in the IRS Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, VITA, or the Tax Counseling for the Elderly, TCE, programs. IRS-certified volunteers provide free basic tax prep for low to moderate income taxpayers. The TCE program is specifically for taxpayers age 60 and older. Go to irs.gov and enter free tax prep in the search box to find a VITA or TCE site near you.
This has been a reminder from community-minded Jazzy 88 WFSK.
Support for WFSK comes from Ed's Fish, located at the corner of D.B. Todd Boulevard and Buchanan Street. Ed's Fish is open Monday through Thursday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Friday and Saturday from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. In business since 1972, Ed's features whiting and catfish with side dishes. For more information about Ed's Fish, call 615-255-4362. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Alrighty, Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And back with us this afternoon is Alan Hirsch. He is author of the book, Impeaching the President, Past, Present, and Future. and Allen is instructor in the humanities and chair of the Justice and Law Studies program at Williams College. And Allen, how are you today? You doing well?
Doing great, thanks.
Good. It's good to have you on again and catch up with you. Your book is so timely. You know, I had the crimps in my pages from the last time I had you on, and because we kind of went through a couple of areas. But your book is just popping to life like crazy with today's news cycle and this recent news cycle.
I was just going to say, talk about timely. You guys booked me about 2 months ago.
I know.
And, I don't know if you were clairvoyant or what.
Yes, it works like that all the time. I mean, it's just like, thank you, God. But it and that's a lot of times people don't know that when the news headlines fall out, we had somebody already way, way in advance booked. Because when you were on before and you gave the overview, we went through some of the chapters, you spent some time on, you know, Andrew Johnson. You spent some time on Nixon, Clinton. And I was just mentioning to the audience last hour that your last chapter is kind of the Trump section entree into the book. Now, are you already working on the revised version of your latest?
Yeah. Boy, I thought about it, but no, I don't think I could stand it right now.
Well, as someone who does what you do and has a history of being a trial consultant, an expert witness, et cetera, let's get your assessment of what you have been observing in the hearings and et cetera.
Right. So I think the easiest way to think about this is this more like the Nixon impeachment, which is generally regarded as a success story, even though he wasn't impeached, he resigned under threat of imminent impeachment? Or is it more like the Clinton impeachment, which is generally regarded as a historical, a regrettable episode? And my way of looking at it, it's a lot more like the Nixon episode in terms of substance. What Trump did, in some ways worse than what Nixon did, but they both involved election interference. Nixon covering up what his campaign committee had done, mm-hmm. which is the breaking of the Democratic National Headquarters. Trump wasn't covering up other people's actions. He was personally responsible for putting his best interests in an election ahead of the national interest. Mm-hmm. So there's a real similarity there. But in terms of the outcome, where we're headed, the process so far, it looks an awful lot like the Clinton impeachment, which is to say it's getting zero support from the opposition party. And that's what you need. You know, impeachments do not succeed unless they are bipartisan. Mm-hmm. And this is, so far, it just is very grim indeed. There do not seem to be Republicans who are even concerned about the wrongdoing that seems pretty obvious to most of us, much less prepared to take a stand.
Well, it's just so mind-blowing that, you know, the Truth, Justice, and the American Way people and apple pie and you know, holy cow, Chevrolet and everything else, all of a sudden now it's like, crime, who cares? Let's just do them all. I mean, you know, it's like, what happened? I don't get it. I mean,
it's really remarkable. I mean, you could understand if Republicans said there's an election in a year, let the American people weigh in. I said that in my book. You know, it's preferable impeachment would be in a second term because of the first term, the voters get their chance.
Yeah.
But it's not like they're saying, they're not acknowledging any wrongdoing.
Exactly.
There is just such a tribalistic instinct here, so much a rallying around the president, not that he would return their loyalty,
right.
But anyway, that's where we're at.
Well, and, you know, the thing that I've often wondered as I see this thing play out and hear the details and you know, the different players and the testimonies and et cetera. Will this impact the justice system in the future? So anybody who says, goes into a bank and doesn't rob it, really won't be considered as a criminal or doing a wrong act.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. When the next president, let's hypothetically call him Joe Biden, or some other Democrat, when they call on some foreign country to interfere in our election to help them, what leg will the Republicans have to stand on in complaining about it? We're really defining wrongful behavior down,
mm-hmm.
and it's I think we're going to live to regret it.
Yeah. And in conversations that you've had with people, are they trying to figure out why folks don't get it, or is it back to the basic, just it's just tribalism and that's that?
So, you know, as a political matter, and I'm not a political scientist, I don't follow the political scene any more closely than you do, I'm sure, but my sense of it is it all comes down to these Republican senators and House members fear a primary more than a general election. That's the entire calculus. And right now they're more afraid of a primary. Because sad to say, Trump is very popular among Republicans nationwide, and these folks think if they got out front, if they so much as admit they're troubled by the behavior in question, they stand a challenge from the right, and a tweet by the president could be the end of it for them. And they all seem to covet their jobs so desperately. You know, like, God forbid you take a stand and may lose an election.
Right.
And the lesson from history, all of the impeachments, Johnson, Clinton, and Nixon, the heroes end up being the people who do act in this in a patriotic spirit and defy their party. Andrew Johnson was saved by the so-called seven tall men. That's how history recalls them. These were Republicans who ended up voting against his removal because they thought it was the wrong thing to do. Richard Nixon had to go because of a few dozen Republicans said they weren't going to stand by anymore. Where are these people now?
Well, they've obviously changed how they feel. As you watch the, one of the things that the media has done that I've enjoyed is they pulled out the old clips of some of the members of Congress that were so send Bill Clinton down the river, and now suddenly it's like, they, you can't even believe that's the same person that made that statement.
It's incredible, isn't it? It's all a matter of whose ox gets gored. I don't know if the Democrats will be any better when this happens in 5, 10, 20, 30 years and the shoe is on the other foot.
Yeah.
But certainly the Republican hypocrisy is a thing to behold.
Yeah. Well, these things are to me, far more troubling than having sex with that woman.
Yeah.
And I mean, it just, I'm sorry. It's just.
No, I agree with you. The argument is he committed perjury. It wasn't the sex itself. But it was very much in the context of a partisan lawsuit and then questions about this immaterial affair, a consensual affair that he'd had. And it, what's interesting, Clinton himself went before the public and said, what I did was wrong.
Yeah.
Democrats excoriated him on the House floor. I mean, even the people who voted against impeachment in the House and Senate, they said the president misbehaved. You just can't get Republicans to say that about Trump, and I agree with you completely that what he did is much, it's his Article II powers that he abused. That's what impeachment is supposed to be about, an abuse of the public trust. And, so we're in heated agreement.
Well, can you explain fully what the abuse of power is and what it encompasses?
Sure. So it starts, or we learned about it, with the whistleblower complaint pertaining to especially this phone call Trump makes to the leader of Ukraine. In the context for this is Ukraine is at war. Russia has invaded them. They desperately need U.S. military assistance. And in that context, both in that phone call and through other means, Trump communicated to Ukraine, if you want that military aid, which they desperately need, it's a matter of life or death, you have to, at a minimum, announce that you're investigating Joe Biden, because his son was, it's hard to, I don't want to get into the weeds, but his son was involved in Ukrainian politics. He had a position with a Ukrainian company that was being investigated for corruption. And the idea is, just announce you're investigating Hunter Biden for corruption if you want our aid, and if you want to come get a visit to the White House, which would enhance Ukrainian prestige and confidence and so forth. So it was bribery, basically, whether it meets the legal criteria for bribery or not, that's what it was, or extortion. It was saying, if you want what you desperately need, you have to do me a favor. And that was the president's own words in his phone call with the Ukraine President Zelensky. It was, there's a favor, though, and it's about Biden. And, well, do I have to go further? Because, it seems like that's enough. Mm-hmm. That alone, mm-hmm. just asking a foreign leader to become involved in a presidential election, to take sides, to take actions which clearly would have the effect of helping the president right. in his reelection campaign.
Right.
And the other thing about it is it was subordinating U.S. foreign policy. Congress had appropriated this aid to Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
So when the president was saying, I'm not going to give this to you if you don't do my bidding, he was violating his job of executing the laws of the land.
Mm-hmm.
This was duly appropriated money that he was holding up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the course of the last few weeks, you've heard Republicans say, well, they got the money anyway,
right.
and Ukraine didn't even know that it was being withheld. The latter just turned out to be flat-out false.
Right.
They did get the money anyway. Now, small comfort. That really does not make what the president did right, and the reason they got the money was because of the whistleblower.
Right. Right. Well, and you know, the thing that really is, to me, sickening about the whole thing is that in Ukraine, they were fighting for their lives. There was, you know, all kind of things going on. Those people aren't known for being rich and famous and living large. I mean, it's like, what is, you heartless people. You,
yeah.
I mean, just the thought of that is, and it's just too much.
Well, the sad thing is I just don't think the president did think about that. I mean, maybe it's that he is beholden to Putin and Russia, as many suspect, but I think it's just what he cared about was Joe Biden is beating him in a poll.
Right, right.
That's where it started and ended from. And again, this is what impeachment is supposed to be about,
an
abuse of your power.
Exactly.
And, you know, you read my books, you know, like Speaker Pelosi, I'm an impeachment skeptic. I don't want a president to be impeached unless there's a chance of it succeeding, unless there's bipartisan support, unless he's clearly crossed the line and done something wrong. And so now I'm very torn because it does feel as if this is a pointless trial that's ahead of us. And in my book, I come out against going through the impeachment process if there's no chance of winning. I say that's one of the things that was tragic and foolish about the Clinton impeachment.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I don't see how they can avoid their constitutional responsibilities
right.
in the face of this kind of wrongdoing. And I think they have to have trust that the process can be educational and persuasive and move the American people, which is the only thing that will move the Republicans in Congress.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, there is zero evidence that that is happening.
Yeah,
you've already seen the witnesses.
Yeah.
They've already heard the testimony. That, you know, those people may come out again before the Senate, but everyone already heard what they had to say.
Right.
Fiona Hill and company, and it just didn't move. Doesn't seem to have even moved the needle.
Right. And you know, the thing that is so, I guess, mind blowing. Is that this machine, the Fox News false machine, false narratives, that people are repeating it, and they're hearing it, they're repeating it, and they're believing it. And they will hear, may listen to some of the testimony or read it or whatever, but they simply think that's a lie.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they think that a lie is the truth, and the truth is a lie. It's like, upside down world. This has got to be. And that is a frightening place for our country to be in terms of our own safety and concerns for the future.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to say to all that except amen. I share your concerns completely.
Oh, yeah. Well, I now, as the bringing up of the whistleblower, and requesting that the Republicans have requested that they want to have that person testify. Is that off the chart?
So let me make two points in response to that. One is for all of them turning the whistleblower into a boogeyman, everything the whistleblower says in the report has turned out to be true.
Yeah.
So they're calling for the whistleblower. It's intimidation. And the second point is the whole point of whistleblowers is to protect the anonymity of people who have good reason to fear losing their job or facing even worse retaliation if they come forward.
Wow.
That's the whole point of whistleblower protection. And it's not as if that anonymity is preventing the Republicans from confronting the evidence. Because the whistleblower didn't have personal evidence, as they pointed out.
Yeah.
The whistleblower did not have firsthand evidence of this. He heard things, he or she, from these other people, and we've now heard the people who had the firsthand experience. Lieutenant Colonel Vidman and Fiona Hill and Ambassador Sondland, the people who actually knew about the quid pro quo, have spoken. The Republicans have every chance to call their own witnesses. They're the ones who don't want to hear from Mulvaney and Giuliani and Bolton and the people who may have even more direct experience. They're the ones who blocked that. The White House blocked that with the Republicans' blessing.
Mm-hmm.
So the whistleblower, that's just a complete distraction. It's a tool of intimidation and distraction and nothing more.
Yeah, and this distraction seems to, for all y'all, works very well out there. It works so well. Wow, I mean, it's, you know, I'm wondering how can people be so unconscious, sleepwalking. It just is amazing how this this thing is playing out. It's absolutely amazing. Well, I tell you, if you'd have wrote this, I wouldn't have believed it. I would have had some questions for you, serious big time questions. Now, when we come back from the break, I want to ask you as the comparison, since you wrote the book last year, Impeaching the President, and you talked about in it the other impeachments that have taken place in this country. I want you, if you can, talk about similarities and differences between some of the way things have happened, because that's a lot of what is being parsed out in the news. My guest today is Alan Hirsch. He is author of the book Impeaching the President, and we're going to take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Winter means fire deaths increase by almost 75% across Tennessee. This winter, stay warm and safe with help from the Tennessee State Fire Marshal's Office and your local fire department. Keep flammable items like blankets or furniture at least 3 feet away from space heaters and wood stoves. Practice a home fire escape plan with your family. Everyone should know 2 ways out of each room. Never smoke in a home where medical oxygen is present. The increased presence of oxygen in the air makes fire burn hotter and faster. Since 2012, our partners have distributed over 200,000 smoke alarms through our Get Alarm Tennessee program. Over 270 people have been alerted by alarms installed through the program. Need working smoke alarms? Contact your local fire department and ask if they participate in Get Alarm Tennessee. Brought to you by the Tennessee Department of Commerce and Insurance in cooperation with the Tennessee Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hi, I'm Dr. Anita Chandra with today's tip for kids from the American Academy of Pediatrics. Bedtime is a special time of day, a moment to connect with your child before going to sleep. After your child has brushed her teeth, read a book together, or talk a little about your day. And of course, tell her you love her. Having a routine every night helps your child structure her day, feel safe, and develop good sleep habits. Relationships matter. For more, talk with your pediatrician and visit healthychildren.org.
This has been a reminder from community-minded Jazzy 88 WFSK.
Support for WFSK comes from Nashville General Hospital at Meharry. You should be at the center of your own health care, and we are here to help you. Call the Nashville Healthcare Center today and make an appointment with one of our primary care providers, 615-341-4488, or visit us on the web at nashvillehealthcarecenter.com.
K
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All righty, Nashville. Alan Hirsch is the author of Impeaching the President, Past, Present, and Future. He is also humanities and chair, instructor in humanities, rather, and chair of the Justice and Law Program at Williams College. Now, since you included the other impeachments we've had in our nation, is there anything at all that this one resembles like any of the past? Or yeah. Is it? Okay, what? Tell
me. So I think the Nixon impeachment is the one that is most on point. So very briefly, Andrew Johnson was a terrible president. He became president when Lincoln was assassinated, and unfortunately, he changed the policies of the administration. He impeded Reconstruction. He was racist, a white supremacist. But all of that is not impeachable. He would have lost in the 1868 election, and that's what should have happened. But the radical Republicans in Congress were so impatient that they impeached him over what was really a policy disagreement, which was the pace of Reconstruction. Mm-hmm. And historians have come to believe that that was not just an ill-fated, but an ill-advised impeachment. And he was impeached, but the Senate, by the skin of his teeth, he survived because, as I said, seven Republicans said they wouldn't go along. Mm-hmm. Richard Nixon, of course, resigned. He was going to be impeached because it was a bipartisan process. The Republicans had come to realize that the Watergate cover-up, which Nixon directed and used several government agencies, used and abused the CIA, the FBI, the IRS in the process, it was generally recognized that this is really what impeachment is about.
Yeah.
And so that's a success story. And that's the one that this seems most similar to me in terms of the presidential conduct. They each involved election interference.
Right.
You know, the underlying act in Watergate was breaking into the Democratic National Headquarters, looking for dirt on the Democrats that Nixon could then exploit when he was up for re-election in 1972. And that obviously has a similarity to Donald Trump, except it seems to me what Trump did is worse.
Yeah.
Nixon didn't involve a foreign country, for one thing. He didn't subvert this policy of his own government to protect a country that was under attack.
Uh-huh.
So in various respects, I think what Trump did was worse. But if we're going to compare it to any of the three impeachment episodes, it seems to me Nixon is the one.
Well, and Alan, correct me if I'm wrong, but during the time of Nixon, I was young. But I do remember that at first the Republicans did not want to believe it. They did not sign on. It was in after time.
So that's a great point. And that's one thing which, if we want to be optimistic, we could say that gives us a ray of hope. You're absolutely right. In the early stages of Watergate, the polls were like they are now. No Republicans were on board. And it was only in the long course of the investigation by both Congress and the Washington Post, Woodward and Bernstein, of course, drip, drip, drip. The more we learned, the more Nixon's support finally began to erode. The only thing is, I don't think we're in the same place we were then.
You know,
that was a time where there was just a greater degree of open-mindedness, bipartisanship. There were moderate and even liberal Republicans. And now it seems to me that if Mitt Romney and maybe Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, if we get three or four votes to convict the president, that will be a lot.
Yeah. Well, if you had one, I would be shocked. but I just remember that it was a drip, drip, drip.
That's true.
And it wasn't overnight. So that's my one stick of optimism.
The only thing I'll say is that was a process that took close to 2 years.
Yes.
And this is going to be over in a month.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know 2 years. I don't know if people's nerves can handle 2 years. I don't know.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem, I don't fault Speaker Pelosi for drawing the articles of impeachment narrowly, but they really have focused just on the Ukraine business. If they could have kept things open.
Yeah.
And there was more to learn about it. They could have gone to court to try to get the subpoenaed witnesses forced to testify. They were in a rush. And I can understand them wanting to get this over with because it just doesn't seem to be getting anywhere. But I wish they had taken their time about it.
Yeah. Well, I just can't believe that he's blocked everything, every person, every document, everything, and still is hollering, "I'm innocent." What?
Yeah. And they say, where's the smoking gun? Yeah. Well, you won't let the smoking gun come to life.
It's laying there smoking. Can't you see it? I know you had a question or comment. What did you want to say?
Yeah, you all hit the nail right on the head. And because of the Fox News echo chamber, he can get away with that. He can obstruct justice, block all the witnesses, prevent them from coming, and then when he goes to the media, he's not really talking to you and I. He's talking to the audience of Fox News and saying, "Well, I this is not fair. They won't let me do this," and so they run with it. And then the commentators and the people who run that network know that it's not true, and they perpetuate it to these people who are watching. But my concern is, if he is at least not. If he gets reelected, which I predict that he won't be reelected, that's just my prediction. I have other reasons for that. But if he is, and on the heels of this, and he's not removed from office after possibly being impeached for his behavior, what does that say to the rest of the world? What happens with the leadership void that we will now see once the United States is now tainted, if you know what I mean? With this happening and the rest of the world knowing that the president of the United States is a crook, whether we want to, certain people want to believe it or not, what does that do to the rest of the world?
And what restraints will Trump feel if he gets away with everything to date and doesn't have to face the voters again? And I think this is part of the problem with saying let the voters decide this is the very thing he's accused of, is election interference. And if he is acquitted without a single Republican voting to hold him accountable, what is to stop him from enlisting foreign assistance for the next year?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. He's going to do it again.
He said it. You know, he said he'd like China to. Yeah. He told George Stephanopoulos, I wouldn't have a problem asking other countries for dirt on my opponents in 2020.
Yeah.
You know, this crime is in open view. He doesn't think there's anything wrong with it.
Nothing. Boy, his moral values are just cuckoo. Now, what were your thoughts when you saw the scholars, the legal scholars and the professors testifying? How did you feel that went, and was that a good idea?
It was a good idea. I think that the three professors who called for Trump's impeachment, I think, laid out the case nicely. Yeah. I think Pam Carlin from Stanford would have been better off not making a pun about Barron and so forth. But basically, they did a good job. Jonathan Turley, the one who the Republicans wanted to be there, who spoke against impeachment, I think should have been confronted with the fact that he wanted Bill Clinton impeached for what we agree was far less sinister behavior. So I think there's a real issue there with his inconsistency. But I did think he made one good point, which I just made moments ago, which is, what's the rush?
Right.
I'm not that thrilled with the second article of impeachment, which is about the obstruction of justice, not because I think Trump isn't obstructing the inquiry. He is. But because I think there is a vehicle for dealing with that, and that's the courts. And I would much prefer the Democrats have fought to have these subpoenas honored, have material turned over, have the witnesses forced to come before Congress, instead of just slapping on an article of impeachment based on the obstruction. So I thought that Jonathan Turley did make that good point.
Would you, if you were there and ask? That's what you've done, things like that before, right?
You mean would I have testified in front of Congress?
Yes.
I would have done it, but I don't know that I would have done any better job than the three professors did. I thought they did a, you know, they knew their stuff. Back to your question of whether it was a good idea, I mean, I see no reason why not, but it doesn't seem to have helped. Right. Just like having all the fact witnesses, Sondland and Hill and Vindman, you know, their testimony was really compelling, and it was, if not the smoking gun, it was close to it.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't seem to have moved the needle.
Well, and of course, I don't know if any of us really know at this time, Alan, what is going to move the needle.
Right.
You know, my prayer is people just wake up and say, oh, my God, that's awful.
Yeah, so here's the thing. When candidate Trump said he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and his supporters wouldn't care, he was right.
Yeah, he was.
We all thought it was sort of a funny, cute, glib thing to say that, you know, he has intense support. But I think he may have been literally right.
Yeah, he has been literally right. So back to what I originally asked you was, does that mean that all the jail cells should come open? And everybody who's ever been, you know, in done any of anything similar to what he's been charged with and doing, they should just be released. I mean, you know.
I do worry about the future, the signal that we will be sending future presidents. Which is, you know, if you're popular enough, you can get away with anything.
Anything. Or use other people's wealth and, you know, just lie. Now, you cover in your last chapter, 7, the case of Trump, you have the emoluments listed in yours. Were you surprised that emoluments clause or anything involving that wasn't included in the counts of impeachment?
I'm not surprised because Speaker Pelosi seemed really determined to focus like a laser on Ukraine.
Yeah.
But what is interesting about the emoluments is in that very same phone call to Zelensky, the Ukraine president, which has really given rise to all of this, it's the least noticed thing is that the president of Ukraine says to Trump, when I'm in New York, I'll be staying at your place, or when I'm in Washington, whatever. And it's like the emoluments clause come to life. We see this foreign leader trying to curry favor with the president by saying he will patronize his business. This is why we have the emoluments clause. Now, I said in the book I did not think he should be impeached over it, and that's for the very reason I gave before about the obstruction, is I think he's entitled to a court decision first. And those cases are just creaking along because that's the nature of our justice system. But he's entitled to a judge telling him you have to divest, you're in violation of the emoluments clause. One of the things I think was impeachable, it's in the book, even before this Ukraine thing broke out, was the payments of hush money to the porn stars he was involved with, because that, too, was about election interference. That was hush money. So that was not reporting campaign expenditures, and precisely to keep the people in advance of an election from learning something which he thought would harm his electoral prospects. Right. Now, what he's done with Ukraine is the same idea, just more serious. But to me, this is why the Congress has no choice, had no choice, and has no choice to go forward. Even though it's all partisan at this point, they're not getting any Republican support, even though it's a foregone conclusion that they're going to lose, and I hate impeachments that are ultimately just symbolic, but I don't think they have a choice. When the president is interfering with elections on a regular basis, more than once, when that's his M.O., I don't think we can say, well, the remedy is the election.
Well, and speaking of that, since you work in law and justice and are trained in that, two names. Bill Barr and Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, that's like your worst nightmare.
It's staggering, because if you just rewind several years, Giuliani has a reputation as this great mayor, and Barr has a reputation as quite conservative, but really a respected professional. And I don't think either of them cares even a little about their reputations. Or do I even have to bother to say it, or about doing the right thing?
Right. And has there ever been another person quite like, you know, Rudy Giuliani to go around the world and do these clandestine things that he's doing? No, he's doing them out in the open. What am I talking about? He's not sneaking?
That's the incredible thing. It used to be clandestine, and then he thought, I got nothing to hide. I can get away with anything, and I'll let them see it. It's absolutely amazing. I don't even know if it's a shadow foreign policy at this point. I don't know what it is. Even the Republican congressmen have sensed something amiss about this latest round. You know, what is he doing in Ukraine?
Yeah.
That's even got them alarmed a little bit.
Well, they sure don't act like it. I mean,
just a little bit.
Well, you know, Alan, we're going to keep your number. Because as the world turns, you know, I'm gonna try my level best to be optimistic as much as possible that people are just gonna wake up.
Well, if you will, I will. I mean, that's it. I agree with you. We just have to keep hope alive.
Yes. Because
what's the alternative?
Exactly, and that's the concern I have is the alternative.
Oh God, and, yeah. You know, let's hope this all gets taken care of in November. I don't think it's going to get taken care of before then.
And lastly, how do you think, as far as the job is concerned, Speaker of the House Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi, did as far as, you know, pulling her people together, and because she had to come along in this.
Yeah,
how do you think she did?
I think I'm on her side. I think she was slow to do it. Mm-hmm. She did it when she felt she had no choice, and I agree with all that. The one thing I'm concerned about is I think at this point she's rushed things, and you know I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I would have preferred them fighting to get the key witnesses, Giuliani, Mulvaney, Bolton, to get them before the Congress. And that looks like it's just not going to happen.
Well, I know it.
I'd give her a good B+. How's
that? That's pretty good. And I can remember for some that didn't think she could do the job.
Right.
So yeah, that's pretty good.
But you know what I throw in there?
What?
It's ironic, and I see what you're saying, but just as the Mueller report came out and we thought we'd have an opportunity to impeach then, that seems like ancient history.
Yeah.
And so by the time we would get to court trying to get, you know, Mulvaney and people to testify, there's no telling what huge scandal we'd be talking about impeaching.
No, I don't disagree. although maybe they could have gotten things expedited. I think it was worth a try.
Yeah, definitely. Alan Hirsch, he is author of Impeaching the President, Past, Present, and Future, instructor in the humanities and chair of the Justice and Law Studies program at Williams College. Alan, thank you so much. This was so interesting and timely and just a fresh take on things. And I really appreciate your time this afternoon.
It's been my pleasure. Anytime.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, we'll see what his next book in 2019 will be. I know it's got to be more. He's just not going to let this, you know, it just can't end like this. Anyway, but I think this is his second. Is this his second or his third time being on? It's just really interesting, you know.
I think it's his third.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got to keep that number. Anyway, that's all Nashville that we have for you. That will be A-L-L. You all have the very best of the best. And don't forget who loves you.
You've been listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station and its management.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay?